As Taoiseach, I want to see everyone reach their full potential. I want to help create an Ireland that drives innovation and creativity, an Ireland that is compassionate, tolerant and respectful.
On the things that really matter to workers and families, you have comprehensively failed, and no amount of bragging or bluster will disguise that fact.
Hello and you're very welcome to your politics podcast from RTE News. I'm Paul Cunningham. I'm sitting in for Áine Lawler, who we believe is investigating some story in the south of France. Let's see what she comes back with. Joining me now here in studio is Fiacra O'Kiona of the political unit and also Juliette Gash of The Week in Politics. And Micheál Lehan is investigating a story somewhere around Leinster House, but we expect him to join us in the next few minutes. If I can start off with you, Fiacra, one of the interesting things is that this is the last day of this Doyle term. It comes back in September, and that could be the last term, not just for the government, but also for Simon Coveney. He made an announcement earlier on this week. Tell us more about that.
Yes, so Simon Coveney is one of a number of Fine Gael TDs who are departing. They're not going to seek re-election. So Simon Coveney, of course, stepped down as a minister a couple of months ago, and it was well known that he was making a decision on what he would do into the future. Now, as expected, he decided to step down. He said, look, I'm not going to run for this election convention in Cork South Central. And that as such, he is no longer going to be a TD when the Dáil eventually rises completely and when the general election is eventually held. Simon Coveney, of course, has won a seat six times. He's one of four Fine Gael Cork TDs at the moment, but three of those, including Simon Coveney, are now departing. David Stanton being another one. That's going to lead to big questions for a party that likes to portray itself as having very strong Cork links with Michael Collins.
They always like to talk about how they like to rejuvenate, and they're good at that. But when it's possible that half the parliamentary party is heading off into the distance, it's going to be a challenge. Juliette Gash, I suppose when you say Simon Coveney, the thing that springs to mind is Brexit and him as his foreign minister. Would that be fair?
I think so. And I think that's certainly how he'll be regarded internationally. He was really seen as steering the ship very steadily during Brexit and well regarded by his European colleagues and counterparts, which, of course, you know, we're very insular here in Ireland. We like to think of them as being our politicians. But really, if they do have bigger careers and life after politics, which when they, you know, resign from politics at this early age, there is a huge future for them, and on a world stage to have that reputation is important and valuable.
Yeah, he's given a couple of hints, Micheál Lehan, about what he might be about to do, that there are some offers. But if you think of him just in the political context, he's a young man, but he's around a long time. And when he first came through here, he had a full head of hair when he was hoisted high in the convention centre and then was brought in here.
Yeah, it's quite a while, isn't it? Like the by-election way back in 1998. It's been a long career.
Tragic circumstances under which
replacing in that by-election. And then there was a spell in the European Parliament as well along the way. So it's been varied. And the ministries, agriculture, defence, housing, brief enough spell in housing, full of ambition there. Of course, ambition that was never realised about ending homelessness and the like. And then the big job, the Taoiseach, Minister for Foreign Affairs, where he's most prominent. From the opposition benches, so there was that massive, significant intervention too, kind of that is almost in pop culture now, wasn't there? That tweet on the morning of Brian Cowan's infamous appearance on Morning Ireland, where Simon Coveney, and the tweet gave political cover for all kinds of investigation and criticism that followed then, when he said that Brian Cowan sounded somewhere between drunk and hungover. And that shows that there's a certain edge to Simon Coveney that isn't always obvious, because there is impeccable manners there as well. But there's a steeliness and an edginess that I suppose that you need if you're going to be around this place for 26 years. He had that. All the big policy things along the way too, I suppose, that big drive that he led to opening up the dairy sector here. He was instrumental in that. I mean, that whole view at the time that this was going to be the new white gold. And when it comes to his legacy, and he is seen as someone who would be on that side of Fine Gael that would be pushing now for environmental policies and the like, that is perhaps, some would say, on the environmental side, a damning part of his legacy ultimately, given the kind of challenges it presents for reducing carbon emissions.
Yeah, I mean, Fiacra, we did see some of that steel when it came to the European elections, and he was the man who was in command when it came to the Midlands Northwest constituency, and they came out with two candidates, and it was very much Simon Coveney who was driving it. But the one thing we haven't really mentioned, he was also the Minister for Enterprise. But one always had the feeling that he had a hankering to be back in Ivy House, and that maybe Enterprise wasn't the place that he wanted to be at all.
Yeah, it was very much the case, really, as Michal has alluded to, that Simon Coveney held a number of portfolios. He did obviously want to be, as you said, back in Ivy House, back in foreign affairs, back, you know, as a big name in international
politics.
Did he
have any interest in enterprise at all?
Well, I'm sure if he was here, he would say he had just the right amount of interest in enterprise, and you know that he performed his job diligently. But I guess, you know, when you get a flavour of international politics, a flavour of Brexit, you know, you do want to be back in Ivy House. And it was a very big job. He is someone who had ambitions for maybe the biggest job in government. Of course, he ran in 2017 against Leo Varadkar to be a potential Taoiseach. Now, he lost that overall, but people need to remember as well that Simon Coveney...
He won the membership vote.
He did win the membership vote by two-thirds, give or take. And as you said, it is something that he like to remind people about, you know, as Juliet said and as Michal said, that he had impeccable manners, but there is an element of Simon Coveney that, you know, a bit of steel, and if you riled him too much, you'd sometimes see a flash of it.
You could see it certainly on some of the debates he was having, maybe on British TV in relation to the British government's position on Brexit. But let's broaden it out to...
Just on the leadership issue too, it was notable he did win the membership, but he didn't do well among his colleagues. Now, there could be a big reason for that. Ultimately, was they believed Leo Varadkar was something new, was the fresh face, and was an alternative. Simon Coveney coming from the more traditional idea of what you'd expect a Fine Gael leader to be. But as well as that, there wasn't that degree of communication and ongoing support offered to his colleagues in a way that the Leo Varadkar campaign did, essentially being able to deliver from your ministry for your backbench TDs. And that was striking. It was striking that he was so far off that for a guy who obviously was able to run a good constituency operation because he got elected for so long. But that particular type of wiring, that particular type of cuteness, political nous, whatever you want to call it, he didn't seem to have.
That was, Leo Varadkar ran a lethal campaign with Owen Murphy.
And the person that followed him delivered such a campaign again, Simon Harris, who, of course, interestingly, was the main man leading Simon Coveney's campaign during the 2017 one.
He learned his lesson.
I do, just when you mention just the runaway campaign that Leo Varadkar had, and maybe there was a lack of news from Simon Coveney during that campaign in 2017, I do remember a press conference that a few of us may have been at the very start of that campaign, that John Lee of the Mail on Sunday asked a number of people who were formally coming out to back Leo Varadkar the first couple of days after Leo Varadkar had already had a blitzkrieg moment, really, and pushed ahead. It was the Debbie McGee question. It was, you know, what was it about Leo Varadkar's runaway mandate that first convinced you that you might like to see him as Taoiseach, and might like to say it publicly? That was always towards Leo Varadkar, that bit of what can you do for me as a TD. Simon Coveney, he didn't quite have that. He might have had the membership, but he didn't quite have the TDs here. But
he described in the 2011 Week in Politics election book, great product. You still might get your hands on it if you...
I've got a copy of it.
Still of it. He spoke about having a broad education and believing that politics was a noble and rewarding profession.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to wield the knife, and Juliette Gash has been watching one of these things. It relates to Fianna Fáil MEPs who say they are definitely under no circumstances whatsoever going to vote for Ursula von der Leyen for a Commission President's second term, and yet her leader is going to have some form of chat and consultation, and maybe they might think again.
Indeed. Well, so the members of Renew, so that's one of the European Parliament groupings, they met with Ursula von der Leyen yesterday. She has been canvassing all the groupings in the European Parliament. The election is taking place next Thursday, so 7 days from now. And she's sort of the front runner, and it's a must-win election for her, has to win a majority. Now, she met with Renew members yesterday. They had a shopping list of things that they were sort of like, well, maybe if you can deliver on these things, all of them related to Palestine, because obviously the Fianna Fáil MEPs made no secret of the fact that they were angry with Ursula von der Leyen for going to meet Benjamin Netanyahu in the wake of the terrible attacks on October 7th in Israel.
Along with the subsequent president of the European Parliament, Metsola, as well?
Indeed, yes. So the election for Metsola is taking place on the Tuesday. No one is running against her, so she's a shoo-in, barring some publicity stunt, as someone explained to me, but she will get in. Yeah. Ursula von der Leyen on Thursday has to get 361 votes. Last time out, she had 9 votes to spare, essentially. So she's possibly on dangerous ground. There has been some loss in terms of seats, certainly for Renew. They lost 25 seats, I believe it was, in the elections. However, it looks like Fianna Fáil are probably going to stick with their no vote. Though, according to Fianna Fáil headquarters, there are still sort of ongoing discussions happening on that front.
And it's a secret vote. They don't have to put their hands up. So maybe people can do things that maybe they said that they weren't going to do.
That is possible, of course, with a secret ballot. Now, I did speak to someone earlier and they were saying, well, that really isn't very fair because that would suggest that politicians are speaking one way and acting another. So very dare you, Paul. But secret ballot, so people can do what they want, essentially. And there is no whip applied by the European Parliament groupings.
And one last thing on that, because the Renew group has been expanded, lost a few, but it's got one Ciarán Mullooly also join him. Isn't that rather interesting?
And Michael McNamara also. Ciarán Mullooly, I suppose, was perhaps a bit more of a surprise because he was maybe looking a little bit more on the right than Renew, but he says he's very comfortable there and that's where he's happy to be. He's still deciding on how he's going to vote.
What do you make of it when Micheál Martin said to his TDs that they need to reflect on this and that it could possibly, Micheál Lehane, have an influence in relation to the brief that Michael McGrath is going to get at the commission? Does that carry any weight?
Well, I don't know if it carries a lot of weight for Barry Cowan, Billy Kelleher and Barry Andrews, who kind of would probably look at it and say Michael McGrath is getting a job anyway. That's secure now. Does it really make a huge difference to them and them losing face, really, if they decide to change their positions? I just don't think they will. I think the pressure will remain on them, though, from Fianna Fáil HQ, who will be pushing it over to the groupings in the Parliament to try and apply the ultimate pressure. But do you think Micheál Martin has the ability to get Barry Cowan to change his mind? We know verifiably he doesn't from the time he sacked him.
Yes. Well, that answers that. Let's move on. So, Fiacre, you've been talking recently about money and budgets and money to spend and what people think of the plans that the government has as a result of its summer economic statement. Tell us all.
Yeah, so the summer economic statement, it's basically a document which kind of says, look, here's where we are right now. Here's the money that Pascal Donoghue and Jack Chambers will have to spend in October.
Still
on October 1st.
It?
Yeah, exactly.
Jack Chambers has to spend. I have to get over it. Go on.
Exactly. Jack Chambers is senior minister in that arrangement as well, by the way. What they will have to spend in the budget on the 1st of October. So that came out on Tuesday. It's just over 8 billion euro in the budget envelope, 6.9 billion euro on spending and 1.4 billion euro on tax. And, the past few days, Taoiseach Simon Harrison, the two ministers that we've mentioned just there, have insisted, look, this isn't setting up a giveaway budget before a snap election. There's no way. We wouldn't dream of doing something like that. No way of doing it. Exactly. I'd been adamant about it. I'm sure you have to believe them at the moment. IFAC, which is the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, they're the independent watchdog in these kind of things, they get quite concerned about overspending and potential overheating. And last night in a series of tweets, they basically said, look, the government is, in IFAC's view, they want everything now. They're looking to do everything now in danger of causing further inflation and of overspending. Now, this morning at an event at the Aviva Stadium, I still don't like saying Aviva Stadium. Most people say Lansdowne Road. But anyway, Jack Chambers and Pascal Donoghue were asked about this and they said no. They disagreed completely with IFAC. They said, look, IFAC can have its perspective on it, but we're not risking over spending. We're not risking causing further inflation. And in terms of the 5% figure, so basically every year, you're not allowed to spend more than 5% more according to the rule. It's a very soft rule because government tends to ignore it most years. And they've ignored it again now. And they've said, look, don't worry about what IFAC is saying. Yes, they're the experts. Yes, they're independent. But we know what we're doing because we're the two ministers.
Juliet, isn't this interesting? I mean, IFAC, we have to remember, we brought this in after the crash. This was going to be an advisory body which would give guidance to the government to ensure that the same mistakes made from 2004 on would not happen again. And yet we're hearing consistently that we hear what IFAC is saying and we respect them completely, but guess what? We're not going to do it. And we had that wonderful line from the former finance minister, Michael McGrath, last time where he said, it's a rule, but it's not a hard rule. I mean, it's beginning to run out of rope just exactly how much influence this advisory group has.
This may be a terrible analogy, but it sort of reminds me of what, as a teenager, you go, hey, mum, is this skirt too short? And the answer is going to be, oh my God, yes. And you're like, no, I think it's nice. And it just seems that is always the question, that they, you know, oh, well, we did put our very prudent people with their economics qualifications there to tell us, we'll be careful, but we never really listened to them. And that's sort of the relationship that there is between IFAC and the
and
government.
We often talk about the government because they're the ones making the decisions and spending. Is there any sense, Micheál, that you've seen over the past 4 years that opposition parties are guided by IFAC either?
Well, it is a very kind of useful thing for the opposition parties if they want a point of criticism on how government are approaching things. But ultimately, when it comes to election manifestos and the like, I don't think they are hugely. I suppose what government do have that thing to point to, the fairly major significant thing that they're putting the 6 billion into those rainy day funds, the two funds under different names, which is talking about population increases and also the impact of climate change. So that money being set aside probably does give them a degree of cover. Also making the point that there would be a risk in not allocating more money to health, given that there are more people turning up in hospitals at the moment than there have been in recent years. So for all those reasons, there is political cover there. I think the big thing are kind of in relation to the budget, which government are trying to dampen expectations around any cost of living measures. But there is a reality too, even though if inflation really has tailed it, come down to quite an extent and it's not operating at the same level it was, prices are still going up for people and there is the cumulative impact. So I think when that election campaign comes, that cost of living issue, even if the supports are going to be way down in this budget compared to the last one, that's going to be a huge election issue.
Just talking about election, the Green Party is going to be going in with a new leader. It's going to be going in with Roger O'Gorman. And you can see this renewal happening across the coalition parties. We have the new Taoiseach, that is Simon Harris. We've got the new Finance Minister, Jack Chambers. Tell us about Roger O'Gorman, because it was maybe a little bit closer than even Roderick thought.
Yeah, it was very close. I mean, Joe O'Brien did have a degree of swagger, I thought. Now, Joe O'Brien and swagger, not two words you put together so much. But on the Week in Politics on Sunday, he didn't see this train that was gathering steam coming down the tracks, the Pippa Hackett campaign that other people in the party did. And it was very close in the end. It really was. Well, just over 70 votes. But he Roger O'Gorman did enough. The main plank really of Pippa Hackett's campaign was that idea of something new and also looking beyond the urban areas and trying to sell the green message rurally. Now, I think it was interesting too. I've seen Nessa Horrigan, who's running for the deputy leader, speaking in recent times. She said that entire narrative, as she sees it, is something that really very skilled politicians have placed the Greens into doing by putting them up as the enemy within rural Ireland. So she's kind of taking a different view on that one, but not against. And there is obviously a need for the Greens to be able to sell their message rurally. But I mean, Roderick O'Gorman, could you say that he would be looking to not just the climate issue, but also things like social justice within the party? But he was burdened by the huge migration issue, the difficulties there, and also kind of being centrally involved in the failed referendum campaigns.
Yeah, I mean, to what extent he's lucky insofar as that there's going to be an extra seat in Dublin West when he goes back, but it's a pretty busy constituency. Do you think that Roderick O'Gorman could be a leader who loses a seat?
Well, Paul, I think you actually asked him this question on Monday at the press conference announcing his leadership. Certainly one of our colleagues did anyway, about will Roderick O'Gorman as Green Party leader be in a far better position in that difficult constituency than he would before. And, you know, he demurred a bit from it. And I know he's been asked this on the campaign. He said, well, look, he'd be running on his policies and Green Party
policies.
Could he
lose the seat, Fuka?
Could he lose the seat? I mean, he could potentially lose the seat, but I guess the alternative question is if Pippa Hackett won the leadership contest, would she ever have won a seat?
No.
And the view...
Based on current data.
You know,
no,
and the view really was that it would be more likely that Roderick will retain it than that Pippa will win it.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of Juliette is, you know, maybe from the strategy, from the Greens' point of view, is the strategy better? Try and solidify what you have rather than trying to expand in the number of months, however short it is, before the general election.
Yeah, and sorry, I was going to say in the current climate, but yeah, obviously they have to. But I think that point that Nessa Horrigan, while it is sort of a bit protecting her mandate, really to put it that way. But yes, there has been this this push to portray the Greens as the enemy of rural Ireland, which is really unfortunate for their message, because really, anyway, we can't go into all of their green policies, but it is unfortunate the way that's happened, and they need to consolidate rather than chasing more seats and just say, look, this is what we have.
What do you think as a long-term Green observer, Paul?
Yeah, I do think that they're going to do better this time out than expected. I know that they lost half their councillors. I know that they lost both of their MEP seats. Mm-hmm. But I do think if you look at the local elections in certain constituencies like Dublin Bay South, they had candidates who were topping the polls. So I think there are seats there. I think Cathal Martin's going to be okay in Rathdown. I think Roderick could come through in Dublin West. So I don't think it's going to be the wipeout that happened in 2011. I think they've been much smarter this time in the context of an administration in which they've sewn in green policies into every piece of legislation rather than just trying to look after their individual department. I think they learned a hell of a lot from the last time they were in. Mm-hmm. And okay, Eamon Ryan is gone and I think that's big, but I think what he put in place was a much smarter organisation that's able to box clever. And also in government, so they've got a bit of cash. I think they'll be able to do, they'll do all right, not brilliantly, but they'll do all right and they still will be around. The big question for them is, what is the number of seats they have to have before they would consider going into another coalition government? Is it three? Is it four? What is it? Because if they go in again and do it on the double, they could end up getting wiped out.
Yeah. It is interesting, though. I think if it was any other party and you had a leader who was not running again and there was a new leader in place, they would have made some bit of a reshuffle. And if you look at like Eamon Ryan, in political terms now, is pretty much... he's a beaten docket, isn't he? Because he's not standing again.
Yeah.
It is surprising that he would continue in cabinet if you have someone like Brian Leddon, who is clearly struggling in his seat based on his performance in the mayoral election in Limerick, who has a keen interest in that policy area that Eamon Ryan is in, how he wouldn't be floated into cabinet just to give him the profile boost.
That was the point Matt Shanahan, again, to give Twip a little plug, that Matt Shanahan was making, was that he was saying, well, who's going to be the Minister for Transport now? Because really someone who's not standing again, should they keep that seat?
Well, there's two things. One is that, you know, Eamon Ryan, while he takes an awful lot of abuse online here in Ireland, he's very highly regarded internationally. You don't get to become the chairperson of the International Energy Agency for nothing. You're not the negotiator on climate change for the EU without having that ability. But if it comes to the rejuvenation of the party, maybe it is the cruel politics where they decided that there was no point given Brian Leddon because they didn't think he was going to come back in Limerick and they were looking at the numbers of the mayoral race. That's another way of doing it.
Yes.
Try and end on a happier note. There was a big diplomatic initiative this week. It ended up in a success. Tell us all about it, Micheál.
Yes, this is something that really was resolved relatively quickly in the end, but it did look of the most serious variety.
And I think that's crucial. They had to bring this to a conclusion quickly because otherwise, if it goes into a legal process, you're in trouble.
Yeah, so Tory Tomey was in Dubai and was facing charges there. And there was a travel ban in place as well. A woman from Roscommon and the court process in Dubai was beginning to step up a gear. So it was those hours in Tuesday into Wednesday that were crucial if she was to get out, and raised in the Dáil by Mary Lou MacDonald. The Taoiseach getting involved quite prominently and saying some fairly unflinching things when it comes to the policies and the justice system in Dubai. And along the way, work apparently was already in train in the Department of Foreign Affairs, led by the Taoiseach and also the ambassador on the ground, Alison Milton. So culminating ultimately in the charges being dropped and the travel ban being lifted. And eventually, just after midday today, Tory being able to land in Ireland, very grateful indeed that it had all passed. It was that extraordinary situation where someone who, it was said under Dáil privilege, had been the subject of gender-based violence, was herself facing charges because in the midst of all that, she had made an attempt on her life. But instead of waking up in a hospital, as it was said, she woke up in a police station and faced a charge for that.
I suppose when we, the Irish politicians were issuing such strong language in relation to what was taking place in Dubai, we also have to reflect on the fact that we still don't have enough refuges for partners who are sustaining domestic violence. There are some counties that don't actually have refugees. We've got promises, but it hasn't actually been delivered. And as much as we're critical of Dubai, there's a hell of a lot of work to be done here too, Juliet.
Absolutely. Look, it was a really important story that was raised first by Claire Curran, because obviously that's her constituency of Roscommon, where Tory Towie is from. And then for Mary Lou MacDonald to bring it up in the Dáil so passionately. And I thought it was interesting to see, of course, it was a story that he would agree with her on. But Simon Harris saying, I agree with every word you've said, that's a rarity when it comes to Fine Gael and Sinn Féin. But yeah, absolutely. This is also a week when Cathal Crotty, the member of the Defence Forces who attacked Natasha O'Brien, is being dismissed from the Defence Forces. But she says it's too little too late, because there was obviously this massive debacle we had recently where he got off with a suspended sentence after beating her unconscious. So there is still a massive problem with domestic violence in Ireland, gender-based violence. And again, the Soc Dems brought it up this week. You know, we talk, there are big words about having a zero tolerance approach, but not backed up by action, as you say, several counties, nine counties without a refuge place.
Without a refuge at all.
Yeah. It's interesting when Tory Tower, you speak at the air, we're talking about Ireland being a relatively small country, how everyone clubs together at certain moments. And it was one of them. And I suppose it is an attribute of the Taoiseach in particular, that if he gets on an issue like this, he is keen to get it over the line. Yeah. Equally, Micheál Martin has a fairly long track record at this stage of being able to get people out of tricky situations abroad.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been working as a journalist in relation to Sharon Cummins, the gold worker who was held in Darfur many years ago. And once again, he led the line on that. Just one last question that goes to you, Fiacre Kiona. The Dáil rises today. And that means all the politicians are going to go home. Nothing's going to happen for the next couple of months, or might something happen? What should we be looking out for as we head into July and August? Because I know the cabinet will still be meeting for a few more times.
Well, this is it exactly. So
Darragh Bryan said it's going to meet all summer.
Well, it may well meet all summer, Bram. Who knows? And it certainly, when the cabinet rises officially, is at the end of July, give or take. So there are a couple of issues that we know still need to be addressed. One is the triple lock system legislation being put forward, and that Micheál Martin has said, look, that he hopes that will go to cabinet by the end of July. And the second one obviously relates to ourselves, to be honest. The RTE future funding, whether it's going to be purely from the Exchequer, whether it's going to be from the licence fee, that it had been hoped would be maybe put before the plan be put out there by the start of July. We're now halfway through July, so I think that'll be watched closely over the next couple of weeks.
Last thing, what are you watching for Juliet in the summer months? Anything in particular?
Leo Varadkar, what's he going to do next?
Micheál Lahan.
How many ice cream Simon Harris will eat, because I predict he's going to be everywhere at every event throughout August. So.
Because it was
Harris ice cream month. August is made for this, the energy of Simon Harris.
There's a statistic you had in the European elections that he did how many hours canvas on the last day?
Oh, have some 17, wasn't it? Wow.
17 hours.
Yeah.
So he ain't going to stop.
Careful. You've got to be careful with the 99 as well. There can be very unedifying pictures of people eating 99. You've got to be careful.
Yeah.
But on that note, if he eats more than he should, we may come back and have another Your Politics podcast. But until the next time, thanks very much for listening. Please subscribe and talk to you next time.